I'm up here again in order to introduce you to Doug Stearns. You never hear that fellow there? He's been around Unity for a while, and he's secretary of our board of directors. And he is pursuing getting credentialed as a licensed Unity teacher. Doug has spent much of his adult life learning and studying the physics of truth, and he blogs about that at his website, which is... Yes. Thank you. .com. Yes. Yes, physicsoftruth.com. So he believes exploring truth from both a unity-based spiritual perspective and from the direction of physics can help us build deep spiritual roots. He loves to explore how this knowledge can help us learn to trust life with a big L and guide us and protect us as we pursue our life's journey. So welcome, Doug.
Thank you, Judy. And good morning to everyone here. It's with deep pleasure and gratitude that I'm able to be here with you this morning. I've been on this platform a few times, but never to give a lesson. So this is new stuff for me, and it's really exciting. So thank you for being here and being part of it. As Judy said, the title of this morning's talk is The Physics of Truth, Exploring the Spiritual Realm of Quantum Physics. It's about that place where unity principles and physics merge. For much of my life, I've been immersed in the study of this place, first out of a simple curiosity and wonder, and later on, out of a desire to have a deeper relationship with God. And the title is also, as Judy mentioned, the title of my website, where I've published about 30 or so short essays that are generally on this subject. And as some of you know, my main project right now is writing a novel, and it too is on this theme. Now, I'm fully aware that some people's eyes glaze over at the mere mention of anything having to do with physics. And so, dear friend, if this describes you, please bear with me. Even if your eyes are glazed over, I invite you to listen with your heart open. You might find this more interesting than you thought. At least that's my wish for you. My purpose is to share some ideas with you about flowing consciousness, also known in unity as the Christ Spirit, and how quantum physics supports these ideas, plus conclusions my own personal experience and contemplation have led me to. They may prove to you to be provocative. For example, flowing consciousness creates the universe and everything in it, including your physical self and the person's physical self sitting next to you, as well as the experience of life you're having right now. I don't think this is spiritual mumbo-jumbo. That's a technical term. I do believe it's how the universe goes about its job of evolving into higher and higher levels of perfection on an individual basis. It's the grand design of things. It's how God works. And here's the kicker. You are the most important part of the process. That's right, you. And you. Unlike how we often think, you are not the end product of God's work. You are the process itself, co-creating with God. And when you're in alignment with the universe, you're creating something beautiful that blesses everyone who comes within the reach of your expression of life. You're the center of that process. It's what makes you real. And in fact, it's the only human part of you that is. It's why you exist. And it's why you chose this particular human form in the beginning. The shockingly simple fact is, God can't do it without you. There's a body of evidence within quantum physics that, in my opinion, supports this worldview of how you and God works together to get things done. Unfortunately, our time is rather brief this morning, so we'll only get a chance to just touch on a couple of those pieces of evidence. But if you're interested, let me know. I'd like to put together a workshop. Maybe we can explore more deeply at another time. But first, a bit of disclosure. I am not a physicist. And I don't want to give you the impression that I think most physicists are going to agree with the conclusions that we'll reach here. Far from it. Only the most enlightened among them will. However, the number of scientists that are falling into this group is growing. You see, it's getting harder and harder for them to ignore where their own discoveries are pointing. Some of these concepts that we'll talk about can be difficult to get our minds around. But that's okay. Dare to expose yourself to them anyway. After all, the most brilliant among us struggle too. Take Richard Feynman, for example. He was an especially gifted and brilliant physicist, considered by many to be one of the top three of the 20th century, up there with Albert Einstein. He was a rather eccentric fellow, very smart, of course, and I understand he was pretty good at the bongos, too. He won a Nobel Prize for his work exploring some of the great mysteries of light. And during a talk he was giving to a group of non-physics students about the nature of his work, he had this to say: "It is my task to convince you not to turn away because you don't understand it. You see, my physics students don't understand it. That's because I don't understand it. Nobody does." So this morning I'd like to take you on a journey to the place where unity principles in physics converge and merge as one. It's not the place where God resides. It is God. But before we get to the physics part, I want to talk a little bit about consciousness. At its source, consciousness is whole, perfect, and pure, and it's the source of all energy in the universe, the sum total of all thought, all ideas, and all possibilities now and forever. This is where our journey begins. By whatever name you call it, consciousness is not static. It flows. It flows from the realm of oneness through a channel created by your thoughts into this physical realm where we experience life as human beings. If it were static, life wouldn't exist. To illustrate that point, consider or compare consciousness to electricity. When electricity stops flowing, it has no power. It's merely a possibility, a potential. But when it flows, it lights the world. However, if you flip the switch, you break the current, you stop the flow, the light goes out. Same with consciousness. And as it turns out, just like with electricity, it's rather easy to slow down the flow of consciousness. We do that with our human-level thoughts of worry, fear, anxiety, limitation, and judgment. But when it flows, it creates, it expands, and it evolves the universe to higher levels of perfection on an individual basis, which is what the universe is always working at doing. The universe, you see, has a clear compulsion to evolve this way, and it's easy enough to see. From the age of the Big Bang, 13.7 billion years ago to now, it's evolved from a simple mass of hydrogen atoms to living, breathing, thinking beings that co-create with God. Just think about that. And it hasn't stopped evolving. In fact, Now that you've joined the process, it's accelerating. God energy is God consciousness, and it enters the physical realm by flowing through your thoughts. And as it flows, your ideas, your feelings, your opinions, your moods, your beliefs, and your judgments mold God energy much as a lens bends light. And in fact, I think of human level thought not so much as thinking, but as a lens. You shape the energy into a form that's understandable by other human beings. And then it flows on into the world around you in the physical form of your words and deeds. And that's how you create. The specific form you shape it into is completely up to you. However, in order to be co-creating with God, your thoughts and actions need to be in alignment. We'll keep coming back to that. Now, let's take a look at something that Charles Fillmore, one of Unity's co-founders, said. Everything that appears in the universe had its origin in mind. Note that he did not say some things or most things. He said everything. And that includes your physical presence as well as the experience of life you're having this present moment. Much of Fillmore's work took place during the formative years of the early 20th century. And as those quantum physics discoveries were being announced, he recognized their significance to New Thought spirituality. Anyone who's read his books knows that he commented extensively on science. So did one of my favorite authors, Eric Butterworth, as did many others. However, I was still blown away when I found out that 6 years ago, the Dalai Lama, of all people, published an autobiography of his lifelong investigation into the merging of science and spirituality. His book is titled The Universe in a Single Atom, and this is what he said. I believe that spirituality and science are different but complementary investigative approaches with the same greater goal of seeking the truth. Now, quantum physics is a study of very small things. By contrast, cosmology is the branch of physics that studies the really, really big things like the birth of the universe and its evolution. As a young boy, I was fascinated with this, cosmology, even if I didn't know what the word meant when I was 10 or 11 years old. A clear memory I have was lying on my back at night on the lawn outside the home where I grew up in North Seattle. The sky was crystal clear that night. And my brother and I were gazing up at this brilliant expanse of stars overhead. And I said to Richard, I wonder if those stars go on forever. And he said, they probably don't. I said, what do you suppose stops them then? Is there a wall out there? Maybe, he said. And I responded, I wonder how thick it is. And what do you suppose is on the other side of it? Rich didn't take his eyes off the sky. He simply said, probably more stars. Well, in the years since that night, I've learned this. There's not a boundary out there beyond the stars for cosmologists to find. However, the physical universe definitely does have a boundary that defines its reach. And it was up to quantum physics to find it, though, because it's at the scale of the very smallest things. It's an inner boundary. It's within you, and it's within me. It's within all things. And it is, I think, the most important scientific discovery of all time. It had its roots in this fact. quantum physics says that all things are made of particles. They are not continuous like physics had thought. And what does this mean? Well, it means that at the smallest sizes possible, everything, starting with light and light energy, is quantized. And that means they're made of particles that can't be subdivided. And by the way, that's how quantum physics got its name. Now, at first glance, this news might not appear all that significant. However, the idea nonetheless revolutionized science, and with it, life on this planet. For example, the discovery led directly to everything digital in this world, including the cell phone you have in your pocket or purse. Let's consider energy. Light energy is made of particles, each of which contains the smallest quantity of energy known. Nothing new about this. This has been known for 100 years. And you've no doubt heard of these particles. They're called photons. But the idea of particles is not limited to light. You may find this surprising. But space and time itself, according to quantum physics, is also made of particles. This isn't as generally well known, and it's a little bit more complicated. Nevertheless, let's keep going on our journey. First, Einstein taught us that space and time are not two things. They're one, sort of like two sides of a coin. So what we're talking about here are particles of space-time, one thing, not two. If you take a quantity of space-time and you cut it in half and then cut it in half again and again and again, many, many times, over and over again, you'll eventually get to a point where you can't make the next cut. You've reached a particle of space-time. The reason you can't cut again is not because the instruments that you're using aren't delicate enough. It's the nature of space-time that leads to this. These particles are what form the inner boundary of the physical universe that we were talking about earlier. Physicists have a name for it. They call it the Planck size or Planck time, after the father of quantum physics, Max Planck. Within these particles of space-time, there's no movement. There's no up or down, no big or little, no in or out, or long or short. In terms of time, each particle is a frozen instant where time exists but doesn't pass. Therefore, there can be no before and no after. This is the end of the physical universe because it's the end of the separation that space-time imparts on everything that's on the physical side of the divide. See, the hallmark characteristic of all physical things is that they need separation to exist, just like you do and I do. Space-time is that separator. Space separates objects from one another. Time separates events. Therefore, the physical things can't pass through the boundary. However, thought can, so our journey doesn't have to stop here. Thought transcends the boundary because, as Fillmore says, it's all mind. So we can step across that boundary using our imaginations. And when we do, we find ourselves immersed in a vast and unlimited field of consciousness. Here in oneness, everything we're used to continues to exist, but without separation. And there's a word we commonly use when we mean things that lack separation. What do you suppose that word is? Does anybody have an idea? It's ideas. And there's another word that we can use. Information. That fits. And in fact, information and the study of information is becoming a brand new field of study within physics. But that's not what we're going to be talking about. We're in consciousness, and there is much more in consciousness than just what is. The realm also includes all that can be. It includes all possibilities now and forever, and we have full and free access to all of it. You see, the flow of consciousness isn't a one-way street, so we can reach into this realm using our thoughts, and doing so, we can choose which ideas we want to inflate into our future present moments. And all we have to do is use our thoughts powered by action, moving our feet on the physical side. We call this process visioning. And we're always doing it, whether we're intentional about it or not. I remember the day a few years ago when it dawned on me that a person doesn't need to know anything about quantum physics to know that this realm exists and the boundary is there and that there's something truly magnificent on the other side. Jesus discovered it 2,000 years ago, and you know what he called it. There's what he said, the kingdom of God cometh not with observation, neither shall they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of God is within you. How could he have been more clear? All this leads to what I think are inescapable conclusions about what our experience of life really is, and it's a central point of what my message is. Here in this physical realm, it's not just space and time that are made of particles. Everything within space and time also has to be made of particles. And since your physical life is a space-time experience, it's got to be quantized too. Think about what this means. It means that at the most fundamental level, the experience of physical life is actually a series of individual, extremely brief events, short segments of experience, if you will, rather like a snapshot. Each of them is your current present moment. It's now. And then it goes away, and an instant later it's replaced by another. And there's a gap between them, and that gap is God. These segments of experience are small packages of ideas that have been inflated with separation and flow one at a time, in perfect order, each slightly different from the one that came before it and slightly different from the one that will come after, following the pattern of your thoughts. With each instant, there's no motion, no passing time. However, run together at the speed of life, and an experience of life emerges. It's really quite amazing. A helpful analogy is what happens with a movie. We've all experienced that many times. Movies are made of individual still images, aren't they? There's no space and time in them. Only by projecting them quickly across a screen does an illusion of passing time show up. So this is what physical life actually is. But if that's true, how in the world can we be aware of it? We're aware of it only because we're not the experience itself. We're not those individual segments or images. We're the observer, just as we're the observer at the theater. Now, I can hear somebody in the back thinking this question, then why doesn't our experience feel like a movie? It's a good question. Here's the answer. It's because we have this incredible set of sensory perceptions, our eyes, our ears, and so forth, that are embedded in these bodies. And that leads to an astoundingly real illusion that we are these bodies. But we're not. Neither are we the chatter of these brains here. Consider this analogy. If my eyes were the headlights of an automobile, and my ears were its horns, and my sense of touch and feeling were somehow embedded in the metallic finish of the car, and if I lived that way for a couple of years, I'd probably start thinking I was a car. especially if that started at about the time I was born. And then somebody would come along and say, Doug, you're dreaming. Wake up. You're not a car. And you know what I'd say? I'd say, of course I'm a car. When I see, I'm clearly looking out through these headlights. That proves I'm a car. And what about this? When I'm in the parking lot and the car next to me opens the door into my side, bam, ouch, that hurts. How could you say I'm not a car? Of course I'm a car. Alas, we have a high enough perspective to know that Doug's not a car. Our perspectives need to be high enough so that we realize we're not our bodies either. And when we realize this, we can then also realize that nothing that happens in this physical realm out here can bring harm to us. We're totally protected. And when we know that, we can continue on this journey of life without so much fear and worry about what's going to happen next or what might not. We can put our trust in life itself and the evolution of the universe to rise to higher levels of perfection with the sure, certain knowledge that we will be carried along with it, following the pattern of our thoughts. Is there something we can do with this knowledge of how the universe works to make life happier, more joyful, more abundant? Yes, I believe there is. Many things. Here's just one. I use it to quickly get myself back into alignment with the universe whenever I realize that I've fallen out. You see, every once in a while, I get these thoughts, troubled thoughts. Has this ever happened to anybody else? I'm grateful that this doesn't happen with near the frequency that it used to, but it happens. Sometimes they might arise out of self-doubt. Sometimes it might be due to judgment, my judgment about what somebody else said or did. Or perhaps it's just due to my reaction to some condition or situation or circumstance in the world around me. Whatever. When it happens, it's time for me to get myself aligned so that the Christ Spirit can flow freely through me again. I take a few steps here. My first step is to pause and acknowledge these thoughts. This is an important piece of it. And then I remind myself what this physical experience really is, and that it's only because my true self is not part of it that I can be aware of it in the first place. I'm observing it. And even though the good in the situation might not be apparent to my human self, I know in my heart that what's happening is part of the evolution of the universe, and it is good. And then my next step is to forgive. I start with myself. I forgive myself for forgetting the truth and perhaps for taking life a little bit too seriously. And then I forgive anyone else who might be part of these thoughts. After all, they're living life just like me and they're doing the best they can with it, even if it's not up to my expectations. But that doesn't matter. What I'm doing might not be up to theirs. And I should add parenthetically, none of what I'm saying here means that I won't take action if that's what's called for. I will, and I do. However, fear will not be the force that motivates me. I'll be driven only by the love to do something that blesses all those around me, including myself. And then my last step in the process is this. I recall the words of the 13th century poet Rumi when he said, "This place is a dream. Only a sleeper considers it real." And then I wake up and I laugh at what I thought was my grief. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to share some of these thoughts with you. And I hope you found it interesting. thought-provoking, but more importantly, useful. If you do, then my prayers have been answered. Bless you all. Namaste.